Welcome to the Big 5D Podcast. I'm Charles Laughlin, joined by Kimberly Taylor. Kimberly, welcome.
Thank you.
Great. Good to have you here. This is part of the podcast series featuring speakers at the upcoming Big 5 Summit. You will be joining us at the summit. We're excited to have you there. And you are the founder of Loop. So we'll get into that in just a moment. But before we get into what Loop is, tell us who you are.
Cool. So, I mean, my name's Kimberly Taylor. I have a background as a chemical engineer. That's what I studied, and then pivoted into quite early into founding a business and into this tech space, which I've really fell in love with. Yeah.
Okay. And you're native of South Africa, but where did you grow up?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I'm South African. I have my mom's Brazilian. As an immigrant
okay.
to South Africa.
Didn't know that. Okay.
And like single mom, hardworking, and definitely get a lot of my strengths from her. Grew up in a place called Edenvale here in South Africa, and I studied at the University of Wits. Yeah.
Okay. Great. And chemical engineering. So your startup is a logistics startup and your background is in chemical engineering. That is some pivot. So did you work in your field at all before you decided to become a startup founder, or was that an immediate thing that you did?
It was quite immediate. I think I worked as a chemical engineer for about 3 months, really just as I was trying to find an investor for this idea and this business that I was building. It is a bit of a pivot, although I now feel like engineering is solving problems, which is really just what you do as a business founder.
Well, it's a mind training thing. Like I forgot who I heard say this. Somebody was speaking, said he didn't know when he was talking about his, upbringing and what he decided to study in college. And he said his father told him, study math because that'll train your mind to solve problems. And
absolutely.
That's what he did. He didn't become a mathematician. He became an entrepreneur. So I sort of understand that. Your startup is a logistics startup, which people don't think of logistics and chemical engineering often in the same thought, let alone the same sentence or paragraph even. So how did you land on logistics as the space that you wanted to start a tech company in? How did that happen?
So in my third year at university, we had a project. It was a mathsy type of project. And mm-hmm. there was a question to solve the traveling salesman problem, which basically just requires you to write a route optimization algorithm, which route optimization is just what is the best sequence to do a set of stops in order to drive the shortest distance. And that piqued my interest, and I wanted to know whether that was actually being used in industry, and followed that curiosity throughout the end of my third year to my fourth year honors, and just saw a gap and thought, well, there's a piece of tech missing here that could really assist this logistics and delivery space. And so that's how that pivot happened.
Okay. So you wrote this algorithm. I assume it worked.
Yes.
And, okay, good. Good. I think that's helpful. So you decided this algorithm could become a business. What was I'm always curious about what the process, people have ideas all the time and they think there's a problem that needs to be solved. And then they go out and look and realize five other companies are already doing it. What was your process for validating whether you had you were onto something?
So I knew someone already that was in the logistics space. So my first thing was to ask them, and they said, no, drivers don't, they get stacks of paper, that's how they start their day. And then they decide what's the best sequence to do their stops. And I just continued validating it. So, I mean, I was 21 at the time, 22. And so, really anyone who I knew that worked in that space or that, worked in a warehouse or that had drivers, just asked for the opportunity to come and sit with them and understand what sorts of issues and what that environment was like. And, you know, it starts as route optimization, but, and I think this is with all business ideas, there's constant pivoting. You know, the first idea is not the idea. It's, right. it's seeing that.
It's sure, an idea.
Yeah, it's yeah. an idea. And then you see, wow, that phone is ringing incessantly. How do you see where the drivers are? You know, your you see, I mean, and I think I'm attuned to problems and seeing those problems. You start to see, oh, wow, and it's you could create some communication, an easier communication layer there, and you could create better visibility there. And you just kind of, this idea starts here, but it's just really an amalgamation of so many different problems that I saw within that space at the time.
Okay. So, yeah, this sounds like a, yeah, you have an idea. You think there's one problem that's solved, then you realize you're inside of a business or a type of business, and there's thousands of problems that need to be solved that, you know, are sort of within the Venn diagram, I guess, of the original problem. But so that becomes a solution, a broader solution than a single point solution, right? Yeah. So talk about, I wasn't going to get into your product this quickly, but that sort of leads to where did that end up being? So is yours a suite solution for logistics businesses? Kind of describe what the product is now.
So how I see our solution is it's a piece of software that's really built to help the business manage and optimize delivery operations. It gives them visibility through a web console. It gives them visibility. It helps them plan optimally. You know, there's a lot of things that it's hard to make decisions on thousands of parcels every day. So it's a tool mm-hmm. that really just gives you insight into how to make those decisions better.
Is this a visual tool? I mean, is it just tool? Like spreadsheets? So I'm picturing, like, you know, the yeah. war room where there's a giant screen and then little dots that represent the trucks moving around. Is it like that? Describe yeah. how a user interfaces with the product.
Absolutely. So imagine orders come through an ERP system or a front end consumer application where someone's placing orders, you know, and that filters onto our systems, gets sent to our system. And so you're seeing visually where all these orders are. And we have route planning algorithms that say, well, based off of your vehicle capacity, this is how you should group these orders together. You know, you've got 30 vehicles. Yeah. Well, here are 30 different routes, and you visually see the colors, right? Imagine mm-hmm. you imagine seeing like thousands of orders on a map, and you see, oh, that's one route, that's another route, that's another route. And you know, it assigns it to the driver. Then as the day is going about, you're seeing this driver complete his tasks. You know, you're getting confirmation that he's sticking to his sequence. What ETAs he's meeting, you know, are there any delays? It's very right. visual in how it works, just to help, you know.
Okay, I'm sure, you know, it's capturing a lot of data that's used to analyze, and
yeah.
it's got to be a learning sort of based system, I would imagine, because yeah. if you're not learning from the performance of these drivers and, you know, the efficiency, and you know, it's not improving over time, I imagine it's not working the way it should be, right?
Yeah.
Now, I imagine there's some very clear KPIs on what a logistics business, shipping business, whatever, operates on. I would imagine one of them is you rarely want a driver driving an empty vehicle, right? And you want the minimum downtime where they're not actively delivering something or what, or picking something up, whatever it is. Yeah. What are the, I mean, and I'd imagine improving these metrics have a revenue or cost savings component. So I imagine it's fairly easy to hand a customer after a certain amount of time, here's the amount of money we have saved you over this period of time. Talk about how you think about all those things in terms of how you build the product, market the product, sell the product, and so on.
I mean, it's one of the most important parts about having a business is someone's at the end of the day is paying for this service, this tech, whatever it is. So you have to mm-hmm. have, you know, like that's what people care about. Are you going to help me make money right. or save money? And so in our right. case, it's very much about saving money. And it's quite mm-hmm. cool. I mean, we can track how many kilometers he's driven and then show the reduction in kilometers. Like we see on average a 20% reduction in how many kilometers a driver drives through route optimization.
Yeah. And you can say that, okay, there's so much petrol savings, for example,
yes.
or petrol wear and tear savings. In the vehicle. You can quantify all of that, right? And so, yeah. and the CFO of your client company can do that as well, or you give them the data that person uses to do that, I assume.
Absolutely. Go ahead. We'll see different metrics like reduction in call center queries, you know, because the end customer has visibility of when that delivery is taking place. So you're not getting as many calls. So there are a couple different ways operationally within the business. We see a reduction in how much time is spent in this area of the business because the planning is done in that part of the business because there's no incessant calls coming through. I mean, we had a client at some stage that, and these are obvious things, right? We had a set of drivers who usually would take a month to do tasks and completed them in 2 weeks after implementation. Mm-hmm. And that's, now you have these drivers who you can double their capacity, you know? Right. And so it is often very quantifiable. And we have clients come to us and say, sure, we're seeing this return on investment. And they tell us where, you know, other areas that they're seeing it. So definitely quite quantifiable.
So talk about who uses you. Well, maybe start with who's your first customer? I guess that's always interesting.
Yeah. So Domino's Pizza was our first client.
And okay. That's not a bad way to start.
Sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I said that's not a bad start. Domino's Pizza.
It was. And I'm super grateful. You know, I think that's definitely it was an amazing start to our journey. And
how did that come about? Talk about that.
So I got the phone number of the IT exec at Taste Holdings who owned Domino's Pizza here in South Africa. And I called him one day and managed to, it was August 2016. I was still in my fourth year, didn't have an investor yet. And I managed to get I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was something along the lines of, would you have a coffee with me? You know, I'd love to take you through this product. And I originally had sold more like their B2B side of their business. And really what he saw was actually a gap in their B2C. You know, they were missing an application for their bike drivers. And maybe that also informed some of the initial start of the business where we started in the on-demand delivery space. And that's why our clients are predominantly in fast food, in retail, like grocery, fast deliveries. And we have quite a mature product in that side because of our beginnings with Domino's.
But don't a lot of these platforms or these potential customers have use third party versus in-house delivery? And how do you integrate with those kind of platforms? And how does that impact your business?
So we only work with clients at the moment who have their own mm-hmm. drivers. So they typically, you know, it's a customer who has their own drivers who will take on our loop system. And typically it's a strategic decision for the business. Do they want mm-hmm. to outsource it? Do they want to own these drivers, own that end-to-end experience? And there are pros and cons to both, right? There's difficulties. And I think one of our goals is if you do have your own set of drivers, how do we make this as easy as possible? You know, that's what we're trying to do.
Is there, a path for you to expand to do integrations with third parties? Does that even make sense for your business? Yeah. Talk about that.
Absolutely. I mean, what we've wanted to remain is agnostic. It's from about 2018, I've been focused on building an ecosystem that allows people to set up their delivery network in a way that makes the most sense for them. So in some areas in South Africa, it might make sense to have your own drivers. And then in other areas, maybe a remote area, it makes sense to use a third party. But you still want to have the visibility. You still want your customers to have the same experience. And so that's where we've started to create a real ecosystem type play where have your own drivers. You can share drivers on our platform with another client of Loops. So we actually can match our clients and they can share drivers. Or the third option is utilizing third-party drivers in specifically in areas that you can't fulfill. So really, I think that's been a strategic focus over the last couple of years, is just that building a system that allows you to pick, to do what's best in a specific region. Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about how you've thought about growing the business just as a founder. You started yourself as a student cold calling corporate executives in IT, which is awesome. That's, you know, every founder should have a story like that, right? How has it evolved in terms of, you know, what have you doubt? You start, every founder, I think, in most cases, starts out making their first sale, or one of the founders, you know, if it's multiple founders. What did you delegate first? You were wearing all hats at first, I assume. What was the first thing you said, I'm bringing somebody on to do this? Let's talk about that evolution, because you're still a young business, right? Yeah.
That took a while. You know, I think one of the things I'm really good at is like keeping costs low. And so it took a while, and we outsourced development for a long time before we bought it in-house. So in a lot of areas, costs were kept quite low. But eventually, you know, you're on about 300 WhatsApp groups with all the the Domino's stores and the Nando's stores, and you have all these drivers messaging you. So support was probably one of the big first things, is just user support. That was probably one of the first hires, in just assisting with that, because it's, you know, you want to continue building the business. You can't be answering WhatsApps or on eventually on an actual, you know, ticketing channel. And then I think the next one was training. You know, training became a big part. So it's with our
training system, customers and how to use it. Sure.
Yeah.
So onboarding customers, onboarding essentially. Yeah.
Onboarding. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you were doing I believe it. You were doing the onboarding at first, and the customer support and the sales. Were you writing? Did you write the first set of code? I mean, if you didn't, that's okay. So, but
just the algorithm. So I mean, I learned the language that my developers were using and I rewrote the algorithm in that language so that I could give it to them. But no, I mean, we had a team that built that first piece.
Okay. I wouldn't know the first thing about that. So it's all good. I mean, it's usually, you know, so founders often come from either a tech background or like a sales background, right? If it's a single founder, there's something that isn't in their background, right? But you just sort of kind of did it all, at least initially. And so you had your hands in everything. What was the hardest thing to delegate? Was it sales? Was it, you know, that initial cold call to this CTO? Was it something else?
That's interesting. It's the hardest thing to delegate, I think. It's all a process of, like, I just think the entire journey is a process of learning to let go. You know,
I would imagine
You know, you get a lot of affirmation from doing the things, building the dashboard for the clients and the positive reinforcements. And so, and letting go of those client relationships that you held so closely, a lot of it is uncomfortable because they trusted you, right? This relationship was with you. And so now starting to I think some of the client relationships, the wonderful client relationships and the difficult ones are both hard to delegate, because mm-hmm. You don't want to let go of the good ones, and then the hard ones you don't want to let go of because you don't want anyone else to.
You don't want, because you think you're the only one who can manage this delicate relationship. Yeah. Well, it's the flip side of letting go is that mindset, which is probably a downside for many founders, the mindset that if I don't do it, it doesn't get done properly.
Yeah.
I know your employees probably don't want to hear you say that, but but it's true of almost everyone, right? And that is a very difficult thing to overcome.
Yeah.
I don't know how you managed to do that, or if you have, you know.
No, just kind of. And I completely have. And I think, you know, I had a conversation with one of my team members today, and I have a team of high performers, and that is what has made it really easy. And I've been really black and white in terms of like high performance in our team, and really, really protected the fact that we want to maintain this like culture of like high empathy, high performance. And it's made that transition really easy for me, to be honest. A lot of things I really have let go of. And yeah.
So the old adage, hire people you know are smarter than you. I'm not saying you did that, but that is something you hear a lot. And I think there's a lot of truth to it, but there's a lot of ego management that has to go in that process. And, you know, I don't know if you've developed a set of rules that you have about hiring that you've learned, because you say you have all high performers. That could be just pure luck, or it could be that you've figured out how to spot the high performer. So talk about that. Which is it?
Man, it definitely was a little bit of luck along the way. I mean, there's some people that came into my life that I, you know, I could not have planned that. But it was a lot of learning, you know, a lot of learning to have hard conversations really quickly, to you know, communicate, to, you know, that made me pause, that felt weird, we don't feel aligned, to have those conversations really quickly, and to be honest,
almost in real time, right? Like as soon as you spot something.
Yeah, because all that happens, and in my experience, when you don't, is this, you know, people are not going to care that you were nice. You know what I mean? They're, you know, someone who has an attitude problem is not going to care that you were nice for another few months, right? The best thing to do is actually to protect the culture, the people that are in the business, like defiantly. I don't know what the right word is, but
you're saying is don't let things linger. You know, if there's a problem, solve it right away. Yeah. Totally get it. Yeah, and that can be very hard. It's a change. I don't know how you were before you started this business, but learning to like I said, in real time, solve these issues with people or whatever it is, and just address the problem instantly. It's easy to say, ooh, make a note of that, deal with that next month. You know, that's so easy to do.
It's so easy. And it really is such a, I feel like running a business is such a lesson in letting go of people pleasing and needing to be liked. You know, it's such a journey in self-awareness. You spoke about hiring people that are smarter than you. I absolutely have people that are smarter and do things better than me. And there were times where that was really intimidating, you know. And
if you don't have that, you're in big trouble, you know. If you don't have smarter people than you working for you who are better at certain things than you are, your business is in trouble. Just full stop.
Yeah. So if you're not feeling insecure about the people around you, like you got to level up those people, you know? So,
Well, I had a friend who shared a sort of an axiom with me that was originally it wasn't in English. It was translated into English as being a nice guy is not a profession. And I thought that was a little harsh, but the more I thought about it, it's like, yeah, that's if you don't have that in the back of your mind somewhere in business, you're going to have these challenges with avoiding hard conversations and letting problems linger and so on and so on and so on. It's very difficult. It's a very difficult, like I said, being a whether you were or not, but people generally are people pleasing. They want to be seen as nice. They want to be liked. Those things do not matter nearly as much as being respected. I'm sounding like a mafioso now.
No,
but it's all true, right?
It is. And I think the approach that I like to take and that I reiterate before I give anyone feedback is like feedback actually comes from the most caring place. You know, only when you actually care about people do you take the time to create constructive feedback and have hard conversations. It's a growing space for both individuals. And so I try not to look at like, you know, having hard conversations or high standards as this this negative thing. It's
positives. So I think any founder who has been around a while will say, I may not have realized this early on, but eventually I realized this. You know, these things eventually came to me. If I'm going to continue to have success in the business, I have to figure that part out. You know, me or somebody, or one of my co-founders or someone in the organization at a senior level has to figure that part out, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, that's interesting that that's one of the bigger challenges. I think you're not alone. I imagine you're not alone at all in having figured that out and had struggled with it perhaps a little. So quick pivot before we wrap up. Talk about kind of what ambitions you have for the business, and then also how that fits into the context of building a company in Africa, raising money if it's necessary for you. Sometimes it isn't. You can talk about that. And, you know, just sort of what does the future hold? How big is your opportunity? What do you think you have to do to fully maximize your opportunity? Broadly speaking, what are your ambitions and what will it take for you to achieve them?
Yeah. So I always like to remain humble or just maybe premise it with like business is fragile. So as much as like these are my ambitions, you know, I'm just always so aware that, man, it's hard and like there's always these risks in a business. But I'm so excited. I think what we've done well is listen and meet that product market fit, and there's like a really good, I mean, we have clients all the time just saying, you know, wow, that this is exactly what I've been looking for. There's an industry fit that we've really gotten right here in South Africa. And we have a couple clients outside of South Africa, Botswana, Mauritius, Qatar, and some testing in like Turkey and Australia. So that is my goal, is how do we grow this, continue to grow this and outside of South Africa, within Africa, like how do we continue to you know, we do about 3 million deliveries a month across our platform. How do we do it to 11 million deliveries a month across our platform? So that growth is really important. And maybe to answer, you know, we're not necessarily looking for funding. That's not the space that we're in. We've got, I think there's some exciting new strategic partnerships that are happening within Loop. That I think will really facilitate that technical and commercial growth.
Are these technical partnerships? Are these just bigger customers? What talk about the partnerships a little bit.
Yeah. So I can't openly talk about two of them.
Okay.
I probably will be able to in like a month or two. But they definitely are more, one's more technical and one's more strategic. I really the focus now is how do we just continue to sell and provide this tech to more people. And
so you want to scale up to multiple millions of deliveries. That's how you measure your scale, right? How many deliveries are flowing through the platform. And you want to scale up to tens of millions and then potentially expand internationally. Now, when you expand internationally, I'm not saying you have a little bit, but you want to do more. When you look at that, what are the constraints? In Australia, there's 10 established route optimization software players and they're big and they've raised tens of millions of dollars. Or I don't know if that's true in Australia. Don't know enough about your industry. But is that the kind of thing you look at and say, okay, maybe not Australia, maybe New Zealand instead? Talk about how you sort of evaluate how you scale and how you scale outside of South Africa.
Yeah, so this is an area I would not even begin to try and talk to. And this is why I think there's a strategic partnership. And this is something that we'll start to explore and understand the nuances of, you know, and I think this is why I'm also just so excited about this next chapter, because this is something completely new for me. How do you assess that? Of course, I mean, there's tech that sits outside of South Africa. Obviously, anything that's local to a country, there's a lot more direct support. So there's all of these, the pros that we see by being in South Africa. What have been all of our strengths being here in South Africa? The same strengths exist for those companies there. And so definitely going to go through a process of understanding that in more detail. And hopefully the next time I'll be able to talk to it and say, this is how we. Okay.
Let me ask it this way. Your solution doesn't seem like it's uniquely African. It seems like it's unique to a problem that is probably transferable to other markets. Is that fair?
Fair to say.
Yeah. Okay. So it's really a matter of finding the partnership as an market entry strategy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then what that leads me to think about, what's the exit? Because I talk to companies a lot about a strategy called business development-led M&A, which is where your partner becomes your acquirer. It feels like that's the path for you. That may be way premature to bring that up, but that's what just jumped into my head after you talk about strategic partnerships, expansion. That's how it feels like there's a bigger player out there that likes what you're doing. That could be an ultimate outcome for you. Is that how you imagine things playing out for you? Talk about that a little.
Potentially. It's not something, I imagine there'll be an exit at some stage. Maybe, maybe not. I still feel like I have so much in the tank.
Those are not mutually exclusive things, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That could be it. I think within the space, I still think that there's so much more to do. I'm definitely not a founder that's going to let's exit in 3 years, five, or whatever that is.
You don't think about it that way. You don't have a hard stop in 2027, you know. Okay, great. That's probably not the right way to go about it, but good to hear that. I don't like obsessing over raising money because I think it's the wrong conversation for a lot of businesses, for most businesses, even though it's something that is necessary often. But you think you were able to kind of perpetuate this business just by acquiring more business, not by raising capital?
I hope so. So,
prefer. Yeah.
That's what I would prefer. I'm so grateful for the journey that we've been on and the clients that we've had to be able to grow organically and not have to constantly acquire more capital. I think that raising capital is so important, and it's not a journey that I can speak to confidently. I have been a founder who believes maybe a lot more in, does the product make sense for the market? If it does, why are you not landing clients to that then kind of bring in the money so you can continue to grow?
Right. Well, yeah.
Sc- scaling discussion is probably different. You know, you invest, and so that's a new territory for me, and I couldn't speak confidently on that. But
if you raise money, your business probably would be changes would be forced upon you that you may not agree with. I mean, that's almost certain, really. You know, so you have to go to Nigeria by Q1 of next year or something like that. You know, and which may make sense for you, may make no sense, but maybe what the investors think makes sense, right? And that tends to drive, you know, everything. And, you know, that can be good and that can be bad. Okay. Final question. And I always like to end with kind of something along these lines. If you were talking to your 21-year-old self again, which I know isn't that long ago, but what advice would you give to you when you were starting from the perch you're at right now?
Probably probably to just have a little bit more fun. You know, I think, I don't know. There's probably a lot of things. There's a lot of things I would say.
Have the more fun is a good one. I'll take that.
Is there another one? I don't know, but I think that you know, I think being a woman in this space, it's been quite a transition, and just like, you know, being super sensitive about a lot of things, you know, and I probably would say
in the logistics world, which isn't exactly pretty male, huh?
Yeah, it's very, very male, and so maybe just it's okay, you know, it's. Don't take everything so personally, you know, there's probably a lot more like heartache that I, you know, self-inflicted from thinking at times that it's male versus female. You know, that isn't what is happening in business. Like a lot of the time, it's, you know, we have a human issue. Like there are people that are not so great, they're male and female. There are people that are great that are male and female. So maybe just probably a little bit of that, and just like lightening up and just, you know, indulging in the journey that is building a business.
Right. And it is not a short journey if you're going to be successful.
So
you have to learn to make these adjustments. Okay. We're going to have to end it there. This was fun. And I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope our audience enjoys this. And stay tuned for the next episode in our speaker series. And again, Kimberly, thank you for joining us. Thanks for joining the Big 5D Podcast Summit Speaker Series, featuring conversations about issues important to SMEs in Africa with the thought leaders slated to appear at the 2024 Big 5 Summit in Cape Town. This episode was brought to you by the Big 5 Summit, Africa's leading small business technology event, which takes place 19-20 March in Cape Town. To get involved with this event, please write to us at info@big5digital.org. This podcast is a production of Big 5 Digital and is hosted and produced by me, Charles Laughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Big 5 Digital. Thanks again for joining us, and stay tuned for more great episodes.